during Lowe's Pro Savings Days. Save more on the brands you trust to deliver on the job. Right now, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 8-amp-hour battery when you buy a DeWalt 10-inch 20-volt max dual bevel compound miter saw. Plus, get up to 35% off select major appliances. Save even more on what you need to keep the job moving. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/31 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Today on The Grave Talks, The Unholy Silence, a conversation with author Doug Owen. What if the home you thought would be a new beginning became the start of a nightmare? Before Doug Owen became a paranormal researcher and author, he was simply a husband and father trying to build a life for his family in a new Idaho home. But what unfolded inside that house would change the course of his life forever. Strange apparitions began appearing, mirrors shattered, disembodied voices echoed through the house. Over time, the activity seemed to grow darker and more manipulative, targeting not only Doug and his wife, but their children as well. In his book, The Unholy Silence, Doug recounts the terrifying haunting that shook his family and ultimately set him on a path into paranormal research. He shares the deeply personal story behind those events, how the experiences changed the direction of his life, and why some of the most unsettling moments weren't the supernatural attacks themselves, but the silence he encountered when he asked for help. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with Doug Owen about his book, The Unholy Silence. Doug, thank you so much for taking the time today to chat about your book, The Unholy Silence, A True Account of a Haunted Idaho Home. This was your home that you lived in.
It was, yeah. And it's thank you so much for having me. My pleasure to be here. And this was a house that was a lease to buy, set up by the Catholic Church after I became the victim of a confidence scam, a real estate scam.
I know. That's what made me really sad for your family about this, because you had gone through this other traumatic situation with a different house. You find this one. This seems like it's going to be a great situation for your family, kind of starting over, a good opportunity. And really, it was anything but.
Yeah, it seemed like a great blessing at the beginning. And it seemed like we could finally rest, have some salvation, relax for a minute. We were financially ruined, essentially spending money on lawyers, you know, trying to combat this situation here. And, by the time we got into the house, it seemed like a gift.
When you wrote this book, was it kind of therapeutic for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely therapeutic. It was 20 years coming, and I tried to write it several times, and things would always happen. Life would get in the way, or, you know, occasionally when I wrote the book, I would hear the door behind me creak and then slam, or I'd get a cold draft that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. So, you know, I stopped writing it, and it sat there on my computer for 20 years in various states of incompletion.
When it comes to the paranormal and you're diving back in to remember it, it often resurfaces in a way, like it could be through dreams. It could be through feelings again, like it feels like it's present. I'm back where I was. I refer to it as paranormal PTSD, because it kind of is when you stir it back up.
Sure. You know, the biggest feeling I had with this was doubt. And as I recalled everything I had written down, my notes and my memories, I started to question, wow, did that really happen? Is that, wow, that sounds crazy and fantastical. Because, you know, as you go along with life and you deal with bills and raising a family, you kind of forget about all of the crazy, theatrical, you know, dramatic things that happened. And I had to go back and ask witnesses, hey, am I writing this correctly? Is this what really happened? And they all agreed, yeah, that's exactly what happened, exactly as you remembered it. So that's what I wrote in the book. And, you know, I still have everyday paranormal experiences here in this house. And I've moved twice since that house. But they're not as malevolent. There isn't, you know, I'm not seeing windows open or, you know, nasty things taunting me. There are subtle signs, you know, daily that I have encountered. But as for the potency, it's not there.
Do you feel like something followed you from that house, or could it be something opened you up to it in that house, or did it even go before the house?
You know, there was a couple of incidents before the house, in another house I had lived in. I really hadn't expected to find what I found in that house. Nothing so dark. In another house I had lived in, there was some banging from underneath the house. A friend of mine had watched the house for me while I went to Portland for Christmas. He stayed in the house sitting. And he experienced the banging underneath the house, and you know, he left. He didn't stay there. there were some other things. There was a, I don't know if you know this, Exer-Saucer toy for kids. You put them in and they play with all those things and they roll around and they bounce. Well, the rattle on the Exer-Saucer one time, and I have video of this somewhere where I had some friends over, but the Exer-Saucer started spinning, the rattle. It spins on its axis. And it kept spinning, and it got faster and faster, only for a few seconds. You know, there were other minor things that were happening, you know, throughout my adult life. But it's kind of interesting because before that, growing up, nothing. You know, teenage years, nothing. High school, no paranormal instances whatsoever.
Did you become a paranormal investigator before you had moved into that house? Or did you do that after? Did this kind of open up an interest into the paranormal for you?
Exactly. It came well after, you know. And for a long time, I just stepped away and said, you know, no more paranormal stuff. I'm just going to try and live a mundane life, focus on success, focus on raising the family. And yeah, afterwards, you know, I started thinking that, you know, I'd like to kind of find out what the hell happened. Mm-hmm. What is it? What are they? And start examining these things and really researching it and educating myself about others' experiences and then trying to put that into, you know, some type of a tangible, hey, this is the explanation. This is what this is. But so far, as we are all paranormal researchers, nobody has successfully categorized these things. Oh, we have those categories of poltergeists or demons, entities, you know, doppelgangers, shapeshifters, whatever it is. But we don't really have any hardcore scientific evidence, right, or classification.
It does give you a community, though, of people who understand it and people who don't look at you like you have lost your mind when you tell them what happened.
Absolutely. Now with the invention, yeah. And keep in mind that this was before social media. I mean, Facebook had just started taking off at the time when this happened, and nobody had really heard of Facebook. In fact, it was MySpace at the time. That was the biggest thing out there. And, you know, I didn't connect with other people who were having this experience at the time. They just weren't out there. You know, the internet was still fairly raw, fairly new. And now, yeah, there are communities and people and groups and organizations that can support you and help you. But at the time, it was very much just a one man, you know, alone against this thing.
In the description of the book, when I first saw the book, it said, survival in a, and I'm quoting, demon-infested Idaho house. Number one, I hate the word infested. And number two, when you add demon in front of it, that freaked me out. And I was like, I really want to talk to this guy about this house. And it was a really dark house. Like, the things that happened in it were not your normal haunt. And I'm using air quotes. When I say normal, I don't know if there is a normal haunting. But, you know, it's not like what we normally think about. Apparitions, footsteps, noises, people talking. But at the same time, they're not out to harm you. This really felt like it was out to affect you and your family.
Absolutely. It was very, very powerful, very targeted. I had Big River Paranormal come in and investigate. They changed their name. Back in the day, I think they were Idaho Ghost Hunters or something. I had them come in and do an investigation. And whatever these things were in the house, they didn't give a shit who saw it. They didn't care. I remember standing there in the entryway of my house, introducing myself to them. And I told them, well, you know, every time I mention that, you know, these entities are here, the lights dim. And right on cue, the lights started to flicker off and on. And they were like, okay, all right. I'm sure they probably thought I had some kind of a switch or a remote or something, but whatever it was in the house didn't shy away when you brought people in. It didn't tuck tail and run. It conducted its, you know, plan. It didn't matter who was there watching.
And give us an idea of what this house looked like. Was it one of those that you drove by and you're like, that's the haunted house in town? Or was it just kind of an average looking house?
Not at all. Yeah, it was average looking. It had aluminum siding on it. It was white with green trim. In fact, it had a couple of roll-up canopies over the windows. If I had to describe it, I would say it, you know, it was a retired couple's home. It looked like a elderly couple's home. It was completely normal house. You know, the paint wasn't faded. It wasn't run down in any way. 1952 is when it was built. Had hardwood floors, upstairs and a downstairs, and just a pretty much run-of-the-mill normal house. Now, the walls in Idaho here, there was a big movement, I guess, in the 40s and 50s to design homes like Victorian-era homes. So the walls were solid plaster. They were the lath and plaster walls that were really, really solid. It was built very, very well. And it was just basically your basic home. Nothing unusual, nothing strange about it. Nothing that I could put my finger on.
And when you go in to look at it, you're like, this is a great opportunity for us. You go in and you're not picking up on any weird vibes, I'm going to guess, else you probably would have said no.
Well, oddly enough, I did say no the first time. I went back and said, you know, that house just doesn't seem right to me. And my mentor and my godfather at the time, who kind of was guiding me through this, who was also involved in a real estate business here that helped me out, he was shocked. He said, you know, I'm really surprised. He said, I thought that was a great opportunity for you. I said, well, if you have anything else, I don't want to seem ungrateful, but if you have anything else, I'd love to look at it, because it just didn't feel right to me. And I don't know what it was. He said he would get back to me. And I remember about a week later, all of a sudden, I was just like, you know what? That house was pretty nice. It was pretty cool. I think I'll just go ahead and message him again. So I called him. I said, you know, I've reconsidered. I'll take it. That one seems to be great. He goes, oh, good. I'm glad. He says, I thought you'd like it. He says, I was surprised when you came to me and told me you didn't want it. So it wasn't an immediate fall in love with. It took some time. And usually I'm kind of impulsive when it comes to things. If I see something I like, I immediately, oh, I've got to buy that, you know, or oh, I've got to go there. But that didn't happen with this house. It had to grow on me.
How long were you there before the first incident happened?
I would say I was there for about 3 weeks before the first incident happened.
Were you getting that weird vibe when you're in there, though, kind of on guard?
You know, not at the beginning, okay. Not at first. first, it seemed completely normal. You know, we were unpacking our knickknacks, you know, and keep in mind, we had just come from an emotionally traumatic battle for the, you know, other place I was living at, the other real estate confidence scam. So we were exhausted, and it took a while to really kind of relax and feel like, okay, we're in a safe place. This is, you know, not a scam where we're living. Our money is not going into, you know, somebody's pocket to swindle us. So it took a little while to calm down. And as soon as we kind of settled in, that's when it started.
And by we, it was you, your wife, and two daughters, correct?
That's correct.
And a dog. Mm-hmm. So you're just a family.
Yeah.
Moving into a new house. Kids are going to school down the street not too far. Everything's good. And then
everything seemed to be good. Yeah, neighbors were great. You know, neighbors were very welcoming and great. And the neighborhood was good. There, you know, low crime. There was, you know, just a retired school teacher on the right hand side and what became a friend of mine on the left hand side. So good people.
And the first experience that you write about in the book was really quite profound, actually.
Mm, yeah, that was pretty harrowing. It was pretty crazy. I had never seen an apparition or anything like that before. I'd never seen anything. And it was clear. It was like I describe it. It was high def, clear, just as you see things every day. And if you met a new person, you know, how you perceive them was exactly what this thing looked like.
So you saw a apparition of a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife saw it.
Yeah.
Too. And you're on the second floor.
Essentially, yeah. Yeah, we're up quite a distance. So a grown man could not stand outside the window and look in. Maybe the top of their head would come to the bottom of the windowsill outside.
So maybe kind of like a split level height.
Split level, right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And to see this teenager, this boy run by where I could see, you know, essentially his waist and the rest of him, you know, run by was just, It was shocking.
And so at first you're like, oh, that was weird. And then your wife saw it too. So
yeah,
that really confirms that you know, that's really crazy that you both saw it actually.
Yeah. Yeah, no hallucination. There was no, wow, you know, I've been drinking too much or anything. It was, you know, middle of the afternoon, bright daylight outside. And I remember just instantly, you know, screaming, what the F? You know, I was like, and, you know, like I said, three steps, I was at the front door. I was Michael Jordan bounding and three steps front
well,
door.
You're protecting your family. It's like there's somebody out there.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what it was because at the time I had just built a fence on that side of the house. The house didn't come with a fence. So an old bowling alley had gone out of business here in Idaho. And a friend of mine gave me the flooring or the lanes, the wood from the lanes, the oak woods. And they were 8 foot tall, 8 foot tall planks. And I had built the fence out of solid oak and it was free lumber. So, you know, not normally what you build a fence out of, but it was incredibly strong and tall. So, great for privacy. And, I didn't put a gate in that side. I had a gate on the other side of the house, but the side where the boy ran to, there was no way that he would have been able to get through it. And if he did, at the time, I did have a Rottweiler. Now, he wasn't a vicious dog, but he was protective. And if somebody jumped the fence, he would, you know, bark and, you know, kind of growl and corner them. But, yeah, there was absolutely nothing when I went outside. It was just a slight breeze, but not even cars were driving by. It was absolutely dead.
And I would think at that point, that would really bother me. I don't think I would have gone to this house as evil necessarily. And you wrote in the book, I wrote this down, it said, we always think we'll recognize evil when it arrives. Not in this house, it came as a whisper.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't even realize at first what you were really dealing with.
Exactly. I didn't know if it was connected to the house, if it was connected to the yard, the neighbor's house. I had no idea what this was or how it could possibly have happened. And I didn't think that at the time when this happened, I didn't think, okay, this house is haunted. That wasn't something that immediately struck me. You know, I mean, my first thought was, okay, you know, you've got dimensional portals, black holes, wormholes, the CERN super collider, you've got the Higgs boson particle, you've got all of these scientific things out there that, you know, might explain it. And that was kind of what I was looking for first, is, you know, trying to be a man of logic and science rather than belief in religion.
When did you realize that there was something much darker happening in the house?
Well, you know, I wrote about this, but every time I would try to shave or go into the bathroom, the window, and this is downstairs, the window above the washer and dryer would open up. And it was one of those old, you know, hinged springs that spring forward. And they open up when you push it from the outside or pull it from the inside. It's one of those old brass latches that catch as well. So the window kept opening every time I would go in there, and I'd feel a cold breeze in the back of my neck in the bathroom, which was just adjacent to it. And I had to crawl up on the washer and dryer on my knees and actually close it because it was too tall. It was connected to one of those window wells that the older houses have. You know, they're usually filled with gravel or leaves or whatever, what have you. But they have those wells outside on the ground floor. So they were supposed to be for an easement to escape in case of a fire. But in the 1950s, everybody was a lot skinnier than we are. So I don't know how anybody could have escaped out of those windows unless they were a child, you know, in case of a fire. But yeah, the window kept opening up, and I had to close it, you know, 5 times a day. You know, I investigated. I went upstairs after it was closed. I went up, you know, and kicked it from the outside, pushed on it, shook it, tried to get the latch to disengage from outside, and it was solid. It was closed. It was latched. And then again, I jumped up and down on the area right above it, you know, on the floor above in the kitchen, stomped really loud, tried to get vibrations to knock it loose, but it never did. And it only seemed to happen when I was downstairs and going into the bathroom to shave. And this happened when, of course, the kids weren't there and the wife wasn't home. I was alone in the house, and, you know, I don't know who could have, you know, managed to release that mechanism to unlock it. It was just too tall to reach.
I'd have been shaving upstairs. I'd have been like, if it'll stay shut, if all I have to do is shave upstairs, I will do that. But actually, in this house, I think no matter what, how you would have responded to it, it would have found another way to get your attention.
And that did happen. Absolutely. Things seemed to escalate, which is strange how it ramped up. It started with subtlety. And then as, you know, I confronted it and tried to combat it, what I consider spiritual warfare, it became stronger. It became more active, more brazen.
And this really affected your wife and kids.
Oh, absolutely. The kids didn't sleep well. They had disturbances in the middle of the night. They had visions. They had entities, you know, also kind of terrorizing and harassing them as well. And, you know, my main bedroom was downstairs, and the kids' bedroom were up on the main level. And I wasn't worried about it because, you know, the windows weren't really accessible, and the windows were locked and latched. So I wasn't really concerned about security. Plus, we lived in a good neighborhood in a good city, you know, very low crime. But yeah, that was kind of the thing, is the kids became disruptive and disturbed, and everybody's sleep was disturbed at the very least.
Was there a point where you were kind of wondering what the hell happened with this house before I moved in? Did you talk to neighbors?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the neighbors hadn't been there, you know, for a really long time. I think the lady next door, the retired school teacher, was there the longest. But unfortunately, she, you know, began to experience dementia. You know, she caught me in the yard one day and she said, "Oh, you know, I saw your son, you know, playing outside." I was like, "Oh, Mrs. Greenbush, I don't have a son." "Yes, you do. Don't you lie to me." "Okay."
"You saw my son." I find it fascinating with people with dementia. We talk about it. actually on our other show quite a bit. Did she see your son, or who she thought was your son? Did she actually see that? See that? And you dismiss it as dementia.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That could be. Yeah.
And she might have actually seen something outside, and you're like, oh, she's just not doing well these days. And yeah, after reading the book, I kind of think that she probably did.
I would say she probably witnessed it, yeah.
And because your daughters had seen, there was, didn't they see a young boy too, or I think a boy, mm-hmm. in the house?
Mm-hmm. There was a boy that would throw a ball out from underneath my oldest daughter's bed, and he would crawl out to get it, and it terrified her, and it would happen a few nights. Now, my younger daughter witnessed the same boy crawl into the hallway and vomit, you know, very sickly, and then disappear.
All of that's so strange, because you kind of think, okay, there's a sick boy in the house. Maybe you should be feeling sorry for it. But then there's something really dark in the house.
Right.
So yeah. Was it masking? The darkness was kind of presenting as this young boy to make you feel rather sympathetic?
I think that the house was, again, I'm going to use that word, infested.
I hate that word.
There were more entities and things in there. That was discovered later through EVP, through Big River Paranormal. They investigated, and there were several things. From what we could tell, we had a psychic medium come in, and she determined that the little boy's name was Timmy. And Timmy warned us that there were other things in the house that didn't want us here, and different things that were dangerous and malevolent. So, you know, through the medium, we kind of learned that. And there was a lot of mischievous things, too, that weren't very harmful. There was misplaced car keys and, you know, a box of chocolates I had received from a friend of mine who was Bosnian. And she got these European chocolates and gave them to me for Thanksgiving. Well, I had set them in the pantry on the shelf, you know, fairly high up. Kids really couldn't reach it. Not that I was worried about them stealing. They were very well-mannered kids. So, you know, it came dessert time and I was going to share the chocolates, and I went to grab them, and of course they were missing. So everybody who attended Thanksgiving looked around the house, scoured the kids' bedroom just in case. We looked everywhere, looked out back, looked in case the dog had, you know, somehow, and he never came in the house, but somehow taken them out back, and we looked everywhere and could not find them. So I returned probably a half an hour later after we discontinued the search, because in the pantry I had my stereo receiver for the house where all the music would come from. So I went to go change the channel or, you know, turn the volume up, and lo and behold, there's the box of chocolates right where I had put them.
You shouldn't be looking all over the house for them.
Yeah.
Just to find them.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, several other people check the pantry because they're like, oh, you're just blind. You can't see your own, you know, chocolates in your pantry. Of course, you know, people behind me looking for it too. But yeah, and it just reappeared right there. And there was some the other things, you know, the television would change the channel or the TV would turn on automatically. And, you know, at the time I could have dismissed it as, you know, signal interference, electronic interference, but it happened quite often. Yeah, you know, there were a lot of things that were harmless, but then there were things that just felt wrong, things that felt like it felt like a prelude to an attack.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
That would come with a sense of impending doom.
And it was. And there was very much that. It was very much, okay, what am I going to walk into? Okay, I'm going to walk into the bathroom now. I'm going to turn the light on. What am I going to see?
Yeah.
Or I'm in the shower. What's going to happen? You know, are the lights going to flick off? Or, you know, is this going to happen? Is there going to be a boom? And things like that. But, you know, I had several witnesses to these incidents, and like I said, these entities, whatever they were, they did not care who was there. I had the house blessed three times, once by a priest, twice by deacons from the church, and they sprinkled the entire place with holy water, and And that seemed to just to make everything so much worse.
In what way did it make it worse?
Well, the nightmares the children had were very vivid. My daughter had screamed one night and screamed for me, and I'd run up the stairs very quickly, and she told me there was somebody in her closet. Well, I opened the door, and I found nobody there. However, all of her clothing on the hangers were swaying back and forth like we were a ship at sea. So something was moving those. Then they stopped. My daughter's window would fly open. And no matter what I did, it continued to open. And that was the one time I went to the church. And I talked to them. It was a Wednesday night. We went to church. And I told the deacon, I said, look, you know, my daughter's window keeps opening. I've latched it. I've locked it. Keeps opening, you know, and these things are happening in the house. And he said, oh, well, you know, you called the police? I said, well, no, I haven't called the police because, you know, there's nobody doing this. He said, well, you know, you might want to get some protection. Do you have a handgun? I said, I've got a shotgun. I'm 250 pounds and I've got a Rottweiler. I said, I'm not afraid of any human being. That's not what I'm talking about. And then he looked me in the eye and he said, well, your house has been blessed. No evil can exist where God's love is. I became incensed. I was beside myself. I was fed up. I said, you know what? Forget it. I'm embarrassed. Screw it. Forget I even said anything. Have a nice night. I walked away. I was so furious. I went home, got my youngest daughter to bed. And then my oldest daughter was there and she wanted a drink of water. So I said, okay, well, here's a little Jesus statue, the little ceramic ones that you get at the religious store. I said, put this on your windowsill. We're going to go ahead and put this on your windowsill here right now. And I said, okay, I'm gonna go ahead and grab a drill. So I took sheetrock screws, 5-inch long ones, and I drilled them through the sash into the sill, 5 of them. And I put the Jesus statue there. I said, there it is. It's all good. So I said, it's not going to open anymore. Your window's going to be fine. Everything's great. Don't worry about it. You still have another window. You can open that one. So she came out with me to the kitchen, probably 15, 20 feet away, not very far. And she got her drink of water, and I was going to tuck her into bed. She went back into her room, and she screamed. And I, of course, 3 steps, I'm in there again. And I look, and she's in the corner of her bed, up in the corner, kind of huddled with her hands in her mouth, you know, kind of trembling. I look over and the window is ripped open, completely open. The sheetrock screws are sticking out of the bottom of the sash with chunks of wood stuck to them, ripped it right apart. And the thing was, it was completely silent, the unholy silence. It was just unnerving how quiet it was. So the Jesus statue was crushed. And I mean, the ceramic was just almost powder. It was completely destroyed. And so I put a steel bar, you know, in the frame and made sure that, you know, now physically it just can't open unless it wants to bend that steel bar. Good luck.
How did you feel as a dad at that moment? Because that had to have made you feel really desperate, because no matter what, you can't seem to protect your children from this.
Absolutely. And at the time, you know, I was a newly minted Catholic. So I was, you know, a true believer in the faith. And, you know, I was surrounded by all of these people telling me that, you know, the power of God and Jesus and, you know, the Catholic Church is absolute, etc. So I would, you know, go to the Catholic store and I would purchase trinkets. You know, I would purchase St. Benedict's crucifixes, bury them in each corner of my yard. Every door, front and back, over the door frame would have a crucifix. There was a holy water font, you know, at the door. Holy water is readily available. I would get it every time I went to church and bring it home. I would sprinkle the house with holy water and try to dispel these things myself. Every type of Catholic incense I would try to use. So essentially, I armed myself for spiritual war, the only way I knew how at the time, through the Catholic Church, and decided to pray to the saints and Jesus and God and everything else. And And it just made it so much worse. It was escalation.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Doug Owen about his book, The Unholy Silence. Get more information about Doug at his website, authordougowen.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you can become a Gravekeeper. Sign up at Apple Podcasts or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.